something for the weekend. Good morning, it's Trina Mara, and in studio we have the lovely Keith Barry. Morning, Keith.
Thanks for having me.
It's been a while since you've been in, but you're back out on the road. Busy, busy, busy.
Yeah, excited to be on the road again with my Insanity tour. We're kind of right in the middle of it now, and it has turned out to be my most insane show to date.
Has it?
Yeah.
Where do you even come up with the ideas? Like, do you look at other people that you come across over the years and go, oh, I could do something like that and maybe do a little bit of a twist on it? Or where do you come up with all the ideas?
Not really, no. I suppose I always start with the title of the show. So that's just where it starts. And for me, and that normally comes from the pressure of MCD screaming at me saying, we need to go on sale. We've got all the theatres, but yeah, we need a title. So I always come up with the title first. So, you know, and then the past I've had, like, The Eight Deadly Sins, The Dark Side. Then last year was Deception. So that was all based around, obviously, deception and lies and stuff like that. Whereas this show, I just came up with the title Insanity. And then I do loads of research based around insanity. And what's great about that is, like, with the Insanity show, I found all these crazy people from history who were deemed insane. And some of them blur that line between kind of genius and insanity. And that gave me a real good theatrical arc for this show. As a matter of fact, this show has turned out to be the most theatrical show that I've ever done. So, for example, in the first half, I talk about Edward Munch. He's most famously known for painting the Scream painting. And when he was painting the Scream painting, it turns out he was going through bouts of insanity. He was going in and out of asylums at the time, getting electroshock therapy. So I thought, aha, there you go. I'll get myself electrocuted every night while somebody thinks of a drawing or a painting, and I'll simultaneously have to try and figure that out. And then I made it based around the immoral or illegal or insane things that people have done. So I get people up, get them to on stage, get them to think of immoral or illegal things that they've done, and they secretly draw them. I've got to figure them out while getting electrocuted at the same
time. Right, okay.
And then, of course, for any sceptics in the audience, if they want to come up and get electrocuted first, I allow them to do that.
To prove that it is an actual machine really does work.
It's like a cattle prod, if you imagine it like that.
Where do you get all your props, by the way?
Well, no comment, you know, because
the weirdest things that you have to find.
Oh yeah, yeah, this is an electroshock wand. It's the real deal. And then we go from there into, like, Rasputin the Mad Monk. And he was born in 1869, and he held huge power over the rulers of Russia at the time, and they decided to have him assassinated. And when he was being assassinated, they gave him enough cyanide to kill 10 men. Didn't kill him. Then they shot him 8 times. That didn't kill him. They threw him in the river. That didn't kill him. So it turns out this guy had supernatural powers, or apparent supernatural powers. And then, based on his life, I get somebody up and I give them supernatural powers. As a matter of fact, at the end of that routine, 5 people end up having supernatural powers from the audience.
Okay.
And random audience members. And look, I go on and on from there about different characters from history, and then it ends with an experiment based around Salvador Dali, who was the surrealistic artist. And it turns out, if you research him, he used a technique called the paranoid critical method. And basically what that meant was he drank loads of absinthe, stared at a candle flame, and held his hand over the candle flame for prolonged periods of time, apparently be able to withstand the pain. And then he would come up with those kind of nightmarish hallucinations for his paintings. So every night I get somebody up on stage, they drink absinthe, they hold their hand over a candle for a prolonged period of time, and then Salvador Dali enters their mind, their body and their soul, and
okay,
it gets insane. It gets crazy.
Keith, do you not worry about somebody suing you, saying, I went to the Keith Barry show and next thing my hand fell off?
No, they're grand. They have loads of safety aspects in play. Psychologically, they're sound when they go back down, so there's no ill harm. As a matter of fact, they go back down a better person for the experience. And then in the second half of the show, I turn the tables on the audience, and I get the whole audience to think of the most insane things they've ever done. And then I have to hack into their brains and figure out what those insane things are. Now, I know what your listeners are thinking. Well, that sounds great, but I'm not going because I'm scared that I might hack into their brains and reveal something, you know, too embarrassing or perhaps illegal or immoral. So there's a way to opt out. Every single night in the Olympia and at all venues, we're leaving 500 metres of tinfoil outside the front door. And if you want to opt out of participating in the show, but you still want to come to the show, all you need to do is make and wear a tinfoil hat. And we're having a lot of fun with this because hundreds of people are wearing tinfoil hats every night.
So they won't be picked out of the audience.
Exactly. And people can see that. It's up on my Instagram page. I'm The Keith Barry on Instagram. And you can see photographs of people wearing tinfoil hats and having a lot of fun with it. And a lot of what's funny about it is a lot of people on the way in think that that's a double back bluff or a gag or something. It's not. If you actually wear a tinfoil hat, you heard it here on Classic Hits, I won't go near you. You're free to kick back and relax and enjoy the show. But if you think it's a gag and if you don't wear one and don't make one, you're
getting up on
game.
That stage.
You're
absolutely. And come here, does the cattle prod hurt?
Oh yeah, a lot. Yeah, I mean it's like a cattle prod. It imparts about 10,000 volts into my temple every night. So yeah,
into your temple.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, this can't be safe, Keith.
Yeah, it's probably not necessarily very good for you. I mean, there's no way to. Bar going to Trinity College and getting an ECG machine done simultaneously while I'm getting a whack in the head of this thing. There's no way of telling. So, yeah, maybe I'll actually go insane myself by the end of it because I'm getting whacked every night.
We spoke about this before, Keith, in one of your other shows, how you nearly died on stage.
Yeah.
And it hasn't taught you any lessons. You're still doing loads of things.
Weirdly enough, like, I don't allow any filming at my show. Even to this day, I don't allow filming at the show because, you know, we want to keep the shows a secret for oncoming audiences and stuff like that. But ultimately, the time you're talking about, I only found it recently. There's actually grainy footage
there
up on YouTube of me passing out on stage in the Olympia. So the time that Trina's talking about is the time when I was doing an escape where I was getting tied with 100-foot of rope to a chair and then my head was wrapped in a roll of cling film so I couldn't see or breathe and I had to escape from the rope in less time than they tied me up in. And this one particular night, the guy tied me up so tightly, like I was having huge problems getting out. And then ultimately, I kicked back in the chair. The chair fell backwards. I fell backwards. I winded myself. And when I went to inhale, of course, I inhaled a mouthful of cling film because I was wrapped in cling film. And I just passed out on stage in front of 1,200 people. And of course, as per usual, when things go wrong, people think it's part of the show.
Of course they do, yeah.
But the shutters just came down. And yeah, like I was, you know, I was unconscious for a while. So it wasn't particularly good. But look, it's part and parcel of the job. I've got detached cartilage from my rib cage at the moment. That's from a stunt that, I mean, the stunt went right, but I just got injured doing it. When I was hanging upside down outside RTE Studios last year as part of my TV show with them. And I detached cartilage from my rib cage. So look, I'm covered in injuries and stuff. So yeah, once I don't die, I don't mind too much. Like, you know.
Is it difficult for you to get health insurance, Keith?
No, I actually got health insurance years ago. They're willing to cover this stuff somehow.
Oh my God. Because you write down in your form, you do admin or something instead of what you actually do.
Weird enough, I put it all down honestly and openly and like, I got a policy. So yeah, if I do die or get injured in these things, my wife gets a nice payout.
Yeah,
so I have to watch her.
At least she's
sure
covered.
She cut the rope ahead.
That's
of
it. Is your real name Keith Barry?
Yes.
Oh, it is. Is it?
Why I never. Is that?
No, just because it kind of sounds like stagey, kind of as well.
No. Years ago, somebody wanted me to change my name, like an advisor, and I was like Keith Champion. He wanted me to change my name too. And I was like Keith Champion. And then my whole thing was like, no, I'm never changing my name. So no, I never went with a more show busy name. I think Keith Barry. He's just a pretty normal name, really.
We had David McSavage in the other week and he was saying my name Trina Mara was a bit of a crap name.
I like Trina Mara.
It's my name.
I don't know any other Trinas.
There you go, you
or
see.
Maras.
Absolutely. And Kamara, did you ever get people along the way saying about your image? Because every time I see you, you seem to look different. Your hair is a different colour or you're dressed differently. You seem to change your image a lot.
Yeah, I don't know if that's by choice.
It's kind of part of the show, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know if that's by choice or not. I mean, I don't... I'm terrible. Behind the scenes, I'm actually a fisherman. I grow all my own vegetables, so I'm a gardener. I do all kinds of... I don't know if they're normal things or abnormal. Anyway, so I don't pay too much attention to my fashion. I probably have to thank my wife for that because she just goes, there's your suit for a tour or whatever it is. So this time around, I'm actually wearing a t-shirt and jeans on stage, whereas last year I was in a full suit, suited and booted. So yeah, it changes quite a bit, but that's probably down to Mairead more than me.
Right. Is she going to your shows or is she still terrified?
Yeah, she's been to this one once. So far, and she's like, it's only after the fact because I don't tell her anything about the shows until they're all over. So, for example, with the RTE show last year, she had no idea I was hanging upside down outside the building until I came home at 12:30 that night, and I was like, "Can I have dinner now?" And she was like, "What do you mean, have dinner?
The dinner's in the dock."
Yeah, did you not have anything? I was like, "No." What you do tonight? Well, I was hanging upside down outside RTE with my head wrapped in cling film again. And with a straitjacket on, about 150 foot in the air. And she was like, okay, all right, dinner's on, whatever. So she's kind of used to it.
Were you doing this job when you met?
No. Like, we met when we were in school. So
I was going to say, can you imagine going on a first date and explaining what you do for a living?
Actually, I've never really talked about a first date, but the first date I ever had with Mairead, well, the first time we met was in a nightclub. That was a whole other thing. So that was like, back in our day, it was her
back
brother.
In our day, you'd swear you were 99.
Well, things have changed. But like, her brother, who I was good friends with, he came up to me in a nightclub, in Breen's nightclub, and he just said to me, Barry, boy, will you shift me sister? That's exactly what happened. And I went, sure, where is she? And I was 17 and she was 16. But then her first real date, I met her and she had a snot, a booger hanging out of her nose. And I just
lovely.
There's a snot hanging out of your nose there. And that was on her first date.
She'll love the fact that you told that story on national radio, won't she?
Well, she figured out that right there and then that it was pretty blunt. So that hasn't changed. But look, we're here, I don't know how many years later. What is it? I'm 43 now, so do the maths yourself. 26 years later.
Oh, God. So that's unreal, isn't
that's
it?
That's what I say back in the day. 26 years, a long time. Like, you know.
It is changed there with all the dating online and everything now.
And so,
any more telework coming up that you want to reveal that we don't know about?
Yeah, well, I suppose it's not really well known. I haven't really talked about it, but I can tell you here on Classic Hits, we are in pre-production of season 2 of the Keith Barry Experience. We'll be filming in May and then it'll air probably similar time as last year. So I'm going to, I don't have the dates yet, but September, October time. So I'm excited about that. And then I've got some things rumbling abroad as well.
Okay. Whenever you go abroad, it's always celebrity based, isn't it? There's normally somebody very famous on your show.
Yes. Well, I can't say too much until...
Look at him. He won't give us a thing.
Well, you know yourself, you say these things and then they end up not happening and you have egg on your face. But ultimately, my aim is to be doing television right when the Keith Barry Experience is going out here. I should be in production of a US TV series.
Okay. And when you do those things, when you go off to the States, do the family stay here or do they go with you?
Good question. Well, 3 years ago, I think it was, I filmed a TV show out there called Hypnotize Me, which actually just aired this year out there. So that just aired on the CW network. So that was 10 one-hour episodes. So with that production, they came out because I was there for 3.5 months filming. And they had a whale of a time. We went out in the summer and they went back, my wife and two kids, nicely tanned. And I went back snow white, having not seen the sun at all in LA. I was just in the studio all day, every day. And I didn't even get a day off. It was 7 days a week. Like. But yeah, it was great. They travelled that time. But then sometimes, like, I'll probably tour in Australia, actually, this year. Looks like I'm going to tour there late August, early September. And when I go down there, I'll go down on my own. Well, with Jose, my glamorous assistant. You've met Jose, I think.
I don't know. Have I?
Maybe you remember him. So you haven't met him.
No.
Gush over Jose.
Oh, really? Why didn't you bring him in?
So Jose's always comes with me. So it'll be me and Jose will go to Australia.
And do you mind the travelling, or that's kind of part of it, isn't it?
I enjoy travelling, but it does take its toll sometimes. I remember a few years ago, I went to Hong Kong for a day and then came home. So it was like 30 hours of travelling, got there, did a gig, and 30 hours home. So those kind of ones are a bit bonkers. There was one time, about 10 years ago actually, I was the second highest flyer out of Ireland with Continental Airlines to the US. That's how much I was travelling there. So look, I get sorry, but look, it's part of the job. I don't really consider it a job. Like, I love what I do. Travel is part of that. But you get to see nice places as well. Like, you know, late last year, because I do a lot of corporates as well, besides the TV stuff and besides the tour. You know, last year I ended up in Saint-Tropez 1 week. The following week I was in Cannes. The following week I was in the Glen Eagles in Scotland. And the following week I was in Beaverbrook Lodge in Surrey. So look, it's fun. I like travel, and you know, it's part of the job, you know.
If you weren't doing the job, Keith, that you're doing, what would you imagine you'd be doing?
What would you guess?
I'd say you'd be on the radio or something.
No, well, you know, I wouldn't be averse to a radio show if anybody's listening.
But you can't take mine, so get out.
Mine would be about all the bizarre, weird stuff. I'd only do radio if I could talk about all the weird stuff out there, like everything from UFOs to, I don't know, supernatural and all that kind of stuff. And Goop, which is Gwyneth Paltrow's thing.
Oh, come here. I was watching a bit of that. What the hell is that all about?
Well, that's gas. She's a looper. I mean, come on. But like, ultimately,
she's a billionaire from this.
But you know what's interesting about it? If anybody doesn't know what we're talking about, I think it's called Goop.
I think so, yeah. Well, Goop is the name for a lifestyle brand.
Yeah, but
so,
that's
yeah.
the name of the show on Netflix as well. So it's basically about alternative medicine and alternative healing. And
It's full of hippies.
I look at this stuff, honestly, from a skeptical point of view, but with an open mindset. You know, I followed, so I know all about Wim Hof. So she had Wim Hof on there. He's known as the Iceman, and he does a breathing technique that sets your body alkaline.
Is this the guy who had them all crying?
No, that was somebody else, I think. So Wim Hof actually is kind of the real deal. Scientists, independent scientists, have actually examined this guy and his techniques, and they're saying that there's a lot behind a certain breathing technique coupled with ice cold immersion to set your body alkaline against disease and stuff like that. And I look at it with an open mindset. The problem is she's mixing all this other stuff in there. Like, I was looking at the one with psychics, and all I have to say is that the people on her team themselves come across as very vulnerable people. These are not the people that should be examining the people that they're going to. I think that's the issue with that particular documentary that I was watching, is the fact that they're not independent scientists. They don't have the facility to actually examine the people that they're going to. But look, ultimately, to get back to it, and that's the type of stuff I'd love to talk about in a radio show.
Yeah.
To answer your question, I'd be a vet.
Be a vet.
Yeah.
I just wasn't, I know it's mad. And here's the thing, I wasn't smart enough in the Leaving Cert to become a vet. So that's hence I'm a magician. To be a vet back in my day, I think it was like 590 or the full 600 points to be a vet. And sure, I had to repeat my Leaving Cert. I wasn't even smart enough to get into college.
Sure, now you could do all the mind games and you'd memorise everything and you'd be brilliant. You could go back into the Leaving now at 43.
I graduated from Galway with a chemistry degree. So I actually have a chemistry degree. So if I was to go back and become a vet now, they'd probably allow me, because I looked into this a while ago.
Mature student.
They'd allow me to go in as a mature student into second year of being a vet. And then I think it takes probably another 5 years from there. But in my head, I'm like, I'm 43 now, so if I just dropped everything, became a full-time student, by 48, I could be a vet, and I'd have like 17 years of being a vet.
And you'd be loaded.
Yeah, there's more money in that than anything. I'm telling you,
70 quid for 2 seconds.
I worked with a vet, Ken Kearsey, down in Waterford during the summers when I was doing magic and I was working with a vet and I was putting my hands up cows' arses.
Oh, lovely. See, that's the glamorous side, isn't it?
Yeah, I worked in abattoirs and everything. I'm happily a carnivore. I worked in abattoirs. I know what I'm talking about. The one I was in anyway was very humane. So yeah, there you go. I would be a vet.
Behind the scenes of Keith Barry's life, you'd never know. Listen, Keith, let me see the dates now. I have them all written down here. So you've added dates to the Olympia, so you're now there for 3 dates in Dublin.
Yeah, March 5th, 6th, and we've just added the 7th. 5th and 6th, there's a few tickets left for, but they're running out quick. The 7th, there's plenty of tickets available right now, but they are selling fast. And I'm really excited. These will be my only shows, certainly in Dublin this year.
Okay.
So grab them now.
But there's dates in February as well. So you're going to be in the Everyman in Cork on the 15th February. You're going to be, I'm just having a look here too. God, you're everywhere really, aren't you?
Yeah.
You're going to be in the Everyman again 13th of March.
Yeah.
Waterford. Listen, just give me the website. All the dates are up there.
Yeah, keithbarry.com or also obviously ticketmaster.ie or mcd.ie. And if you want to check out my Instagram page, I'm at the Keith Barry because I'm putting up loads of content up there from the shows. So if people want to get a snippet of the show to decide whether they like it or not, that's the place to watch.
Okay, thanks, Keith.
Thanks.
This is Something for the Weekend on Classic Hits.